My name is John Eastman. I'm an alcoholic. I'm sure nice to see my brothers and sisters tonight. I love you all. I'd like to especially welcome 14 people here tonight. Beginning of a new life. It was for me when I got here. I'm going to get comfortable and join my... See that idiot over there with a tie on? I guess there's another one in there somewhere. I thought I'd come down and impress you. I got drunk in Watsonville. I got sobered up there. But I got drunk in my head many years before. I'm going to keep this in the context of time, hopefully. I sobered up, really sobered up in 1975. I tried this program in 67, and I sloshed around for 3 or 4 months in and out of meetings. And I came in with a nice set of threads on. I was driving Cadillac. I looked at that bunch of flakes, and I said to myself, I don't need this. I can handle it. So I went back out and tried to maintain my drinking. I also got in. I'm going to throw this in right now to make you addicts comfortable. I got into prescription drugs, too. They were a minor issue because the doctor cut me off and my wife cut me off. More ways than one. So I had to go it alone on booze, and I was afraid of anything with a needle on the end of it. Anything I can't stand is pain of any kind. That's why I drank. I was in pain for a long time. I didn't know why. Didn't understand me. The biggest mystery in my life is me. I am the mystery. And this program has been able to unravel some of the mystery and allow me to identify myself. See, with you folks, I fit in fine. It's out there that I have a hell of a time, you know, with all those squares. People that don't understand that I'm touchy. Amongst other things. I'll start from the beginning and tell you that I came from a broken home at the end of the Depression. A stigma was laid upon me by my mother, God bless her. She was an Irish Catholic. Divorce was a no-no. Women in those days had a stigma as far as getting a job was concerned if they were divorced. You know, they were prey. Holy smoke, what happened? They were prey. The boss could say, oh, divorce, so maybe I can move up a little business here, you know. So she was fighting that. I didn't understand. And I lived that lie. Everybody asked me, well, where's your father? And I tell him he's dead. And I lived with that until he actually did die. I went to his funeral. Age 43 I was at the time. So I lived that lie a long time. And I knew that left a hole in my gut. And that's not the reason I drank, but it's part of the reason of the makeup of the man. I was a jock. Most attorneys today, I like sports, and that's what kept me out of trouble all through high school. I trained. I played all the sports, won 6 varsity letters in high school, was on an undefeated football team, and I got 3 scholarships to play college ball, Notre Dame, USC, Cal. Didn't ever happen. World War II came along when I was a junior in high school, and off to the war I went. And I was a prisoner of war of the Germans in World War II. I was killed in a B-17, shot down, captured by the Germans, released by the Russians. And man, did I do some drinking in Russia. If you have never touched or tasted beet wine, as Hillary Drake would say, you got a treat waiting for you in heaven. That stuff is delicious. Powerful, too. Anyway, I was in and out of service for 21 months. The reason I got out so soon, I was a prisoner of war, and they left prisoners out early. I made an attempt to go to college. I made an attempt to get back into shape. Meanwhile, I picked up the habit of smoking. I still smoke. The habit of drinking. I don't drink anymore. And so I never did get back into shape. I never had an opportunity to take up those possibilities. and I didn't do a very good job in college. My boozing progressed along the way. I met the woman I married, and the crazy Alan is still with me after 38 years of marriage. We just celebrated it. Went up to Reno. She drank. I didn't. We played a lot of attic and roulette and had 6 children. One of my sons is a successful man in the city and does well. In spite of me, they're all turning out pretty good. I will say that I've got 2 maybes, you know. One kid's had 3 drunk driving charges. There's a 7-year stretch between the first and the third, so the law will probably get off on first, but he's going to get ripe one of these days and fall out of the tree and join us, I hope. The other one likes his beer. I don't know how. He had 1 drunk driving charge around the holidays. It is hereditary, this disease. It has been proven to be hereditary. And if you go back far enough in your lineage, you will find a horse thief that drank too much. It's a proven fact. My mother, who was a prissy and lace curtain Irish now, let it slip off from under the rug that my grandfather had a problem with booze. I don't know anything about my father's side of the fence because I never knew them. But it is hereditary. And you'll find it. You know, there's nothing to be ashamed about. You know, this is a disease, a terminal disease that we can die from. And if you've been around long enough, you'll find them dying. Some in this room will die from an overdose. You know, we're all addictive. You know, I have addictive personality. I get madder than hell when the vanilla ice cream is gone and the chocolate sauce is low. You know, Jesus, I get mad. I tell her so, too. I came to the program sobering up and going blind at the same time. The latter I didn't know. I had an eye problem, and I was going to the ophthalmologist, and I was getting some of that soft money and workman's comp checks were showing up. And I'm grateful for that today simply because I didn't have to go out and make a buck to pay the bills. My wife had a little job that wasn't making it, but what I was making, we finally got it cleaned up. I thought I'd never get out of the hole that I did. What was happening was that the steroids the doctor was dropping in my eyes was helping, but it wasn't happening. And finally, 13 months down the road, I was sober 13 months, mind you, when he laid a letter pre-typed before I got to the appointment that I was going to go blind. And thank God for this program. I went to see my sponsor, who's sober 38 years. And I said, "Herb, the doctor tells me I'm going blind." He says, "How much can you see?" I said, "Well, I see pretty good." "Yeah, you see, I've got a problem." "He's got an inconvenience." Jesus, I could addict him right there. But he had laid in so few words, so many words of wisdom on me, that I'm very grateful to that man. He's helped me through many a tough time that I might have gone out and gone crazy over. See, an alcoholic, before he picks the drink up, if you've been here a while and you're sober and you're off the sauce, off the drugs, whatever, before you take the fix, before you pick up the drink, you are crazy. You're nuts. You picked up and you're gone, man. But you were nuts before you picked it up. I discovered that, thanks to my sponsor. He said, "You're already crazy when you pick up." I remember that. And I do get crazy. I've been absolutely out of my mind and not take a drink. Now that's a miracle. That's the first thing I did when I was in trouble. I grabbed a bottle. "I'll show you, you son of a bitch," and I get drunk over it. I can tell you that in the process of sobriety, I've discovered many things. I've discovered that people are, for the most part, nice. Even normal people. If you're nice to them, they're nice to you. I never knew that before. I used to get all these goddamn fears and apprehensions, and I found myself doing numbers in my head that weren't there. And I found that if I'm just patient, which I haven't got any, understanding. I have very little of that. The things usually go the way the God that I understand knows it. I've already mentioned the fact that my mother was an Irish Catholic. She sent me off to parochial school. I had 8 years of that and got in trouble with the Monsignor, and he was about to throw my ass out when she says, "I'll save you the trouble," and she put me in a public school. And I thought I got out of jail. And that was a great relief for me, because I didn't fit, you know. I just couldn't handle all that. And at that point in time, and mind you, nothing against that particular religion, at that point in time, I kissed it goodbye and said, "I don't have to do that anymore." And I felt that way when anybody brought up God or religion of any description. I was ready to run the other way until I got here. And I walked in our fellowship hall in Watsonville, and there's a serenity prayer hanging there, bigger than life. And the first word in the serenity prayer is God. And I says, "Oh, Christ, here we go again." But I had no other place to go. I didn't go to recovery dry out. I didn't know those exotic places existed, like Janice Detox in Santa Cruz, or Montevilla and Morgan Hill, or Star Lodge in Scottsdale. I didn't know those places were around. I just walked in the meeting, sat on my hands, and went crazy. But I kept coming back, and there was a guy there that spotted me, and he says, I thought there was only three meetings a week. The damn hall was closed all day long, and there was a Tuesday night, Thursday night, and Sunday night meeting. That was it, man. And I'm going from Thursday to Sunday, one hell of a long time to stay dry without a meeting. And this guy spotted it. He says, "Hey, how'd you like to take in a few more meetings?" So we started tripping around. And he was 12-stepping a guy up here in San Rafael. He was a salesman on the road. And that meeting scared the hell out of me. "Come on," he says, "I'm going to pick you up about a half hour early, and we're going to go to a meeting up in Santa Fe." I said, "Okay." He came by the house, picked me up, and away we went. We walked into this. It was a Jesuits, still up there, Jesuits seminary. And here were these beautiful big bay windows that out overlooked the whole valley here, Santa Clara Valley. It's gorgeous. You know? Rooms full of about 200 people. And here's some psychiatrist up there using 75-cent words telling his story about alcoholism and how he's trying to stay sober. He mentioned it. He says, "I don't belong here." He says, "Shut up and listen." The next guy was a Jesuit priest. He got up and started expounding, and I don't know, God. He says, "Just listen to these people." He got me outside, and he said, "I want to tell you something." He also met the man who was 12-stepping, and we were both listening to him, and he said, "Alcohol doesn't give a good goddamn who you are. It'll stomp on you good. Just remember that. It doesn't matter how much education you have, how much education you don't have, whether you're male or female, it doesn't matter. There's only two kinds of drunks, by the way. Sober ones and drunk ones. It doesn't matter whether you're male or female, you know. Throw that one out the window." I found that one out. And I remember sitting, we finally got the hall open, our fellowship hall. It was open all day, and we were doing it voluntarily. We got a 12-step call, and right around 5 o'clock, we just broke up a peanut game, and one guy left, and two of us were cleaning the place up, and the phone rang, and there was a little girl on the phone, about 12, 13 years old, asking for some help for her mama. And that particular weekend, there was a retreat, a women's retreat at St. Clair's Retreat House. And every sober female in our fellowship was gone. I phoned and got no answers at all, or irate husbands. So I said to my friend Gary, I said, "We're going to do it all wrong. This is a woman we're going to 12-step call on, so let's go." And so the two of us went up there, and she was living in a little house trailer. This little girl was really in pain for her mother. And my friend Gary opened the refrigerator, and there wasn't a goddamn thing in it. And he said to me, he said, "I'm going to go and buy some groceries." So he got in the car with a little girl, and went down and got some groceries, and I'm sitting there listening to this lady, and she was getting a little closer and a little lovier, and I kept backing away. Finally, I said, "Look, sweetheart, I said, I'm here to help you about your booze, and I'm not interested in your physical appearance, although she did very well put together. Goddamn sick, I may add." So Gary and I managed to get a meeting that night, and we got a hold of Shirley, who came back from that retreat, who lived about a block from her, and connected those two up, and that lady got sober. She's a very meek and quiet thing, very beautiful woman. And you can see the beauty come back. As she sobered up, the beauty of the mind and body came back. She could not get a job. She had a bad reputation in our town. Finally, she got a job at one of the rest homes. Manual work, and that's hard work. She stuck with it. That's the only place she could get a job, and she had to pay her bills. She picked on a real nice lady, her sponsor, who encouraged her to go on. This lady took 3 years at Cabrillo College, and she got her LVN. She's now the head night nurse at Natividad Hospital. What I'm saying to you is this is a success story. This program is a success story. And for those 14 brand new people, if you want your life to change, hang on. Grab a sponsor. Grab somebody in here that's got some sobriety, that's willing to help you. Grab them and hang on for dear life. I did that, and I'm so grateful that my sponsor is still around to tell me right from wrong, upside down, cake, and a whole ball of wax. You know, he lays it on the line to me and says, hey, you're out in left field. I'm going to tell you this little story. And the years ensuing my marriage and those six kids, the only place I could ever manage to get to was camping. That's all I could ever afford. And maybe I couldn't afford it very long because I don't have enough booze. But we used to go to a lake up in Sierras, and we camped for about 8-10 days. And that was vacation, you know. That was it. Of course, these children started growing up, going their merry way. And since I've been sober, through the grace of God, through this program, and through some good luck, I've been to Europe. I've been to Hawaii twice, Canada twice, the Eastern Seaboard, the national parks. And I'm telling you that, you know, that all happened because I got sobered up. That never would have happened any other time. No other way would this happen. No other way would my life have gotten better if I had not hooked into this program. I found a God here, a God of my own understanding. I got a charge of a guy, brand new guy. He was only about 3 months sober, and he made a statement. He was an Irishman. He made a statement in a meeting one morning. He says, you know, it took me almost 3 months to realize that God was not a Catholic. And it really caught my attention. I thought, your head stays there. I don't care if you're Baptist or Presbyterian or Anglican or what the hell you are. You know, your head stays in that space. And the program of spirituality, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, talks about a God of your own understanding. You'll find him here. Our tradition says, the only authority in any meeting is the God that expresses himself here. We express God. And I also believe that God talks through people. I've come to believe that. I've had people come up to me after a meeting and say, gee, I'm sure glad you said that. And I'm saying to myself, what the hell did I say? I don't know. What did I say? I'll even ask them, what did I say? Well, about so-and-so. And I'm not even there, you know, it's gone. But I don't know where the hell that comes from. It just comes out. It comes out, it oozes out. The feeling of comfort, the feeling of serenity that shows up. I'll never forget my sponsor one afternoon. I was sitting in the hall, and this gal walked in, and she's going crazy. And same Shirley, by the way. And she sits down, and she said, I can't know what the hell's going on. He looked her right in the eye and says, well, you can't handle serenity, Shirley. Serenity, is that what it is? She lived in a world of turmoil, and I could identify with the turmoil. And I can tell you that God has stopped the disease in my eyes so that I see shapes and forms. And by God, the ladies are getting younger and younger, and I'm getting older and older. I see pretty good, but I don't see. I can't read that piece of paper. I know it's print on it, but I can't see it. But, I'm a very fortunate man, and I see what I can, see what I do. I give all of anything and everything I have today. The experiences, the love, the understanding from people like you, I owe to this program. And if I can make it, those 14 people out there who said they were brand new, you can make it. Just keep coming back. I got to check my alarm clock here. I got a Braille watch in case you wonder what this is all about. You want this thing over in 10 minutes of the hour? Speak up, man. Don't down there. You're talking to a blind man, what are you? Yeah. I don't want to wear your tails out. You know, I've sat out there and listened to speakers, and some of them go on with their own self-importance too long, and I don't think that's right. I will say this. I urge you, I plead that you participate in this program. Get a sponsor if you haven't got one. Get involved. Do what this man's doing. He's in so involved he can't think of his own self-pity. The man picked me up. Came clear to wants to be able to get me and bring me back. His mind was on this program and not on his own little Mickey Mouse problems. Get phone numbers. Phone people. Talk to them. Talk sobriety. If you've got something that's bugging you, for Christ's sake, get it off your chest. Dump it. Stay sober. I'm going to wind this up by making one statement that a speaker I heard once say. He's dead now. His name is Jack Brennan. He was sober 38 years in this program before he died. And there's a reason I say it over and over and over again, because I need to hear it. An alcoholic is not wanted, not needed, not loved. He is tolerated. If he comes to this program and he gets sober and he stays this program, he finds that he's wanted, needed, and loved. And that's what's happened to me. Thank you very much.
You are the sunshine of my life. You are...
Hi, I'm Kelly Kopp. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm excited. but you couldn't tell that, right? I want to welcome you newcomers. You know, I'll start off by saying when I was 7 years old, my brother told me that we were adopted, and right away I didn't feel like I belonged. I didn't feel like I was loved. And no matter what kind of attention or love I got, it wasn't enough or it wasn't the way that I felt that I should be loved. And when I was 8 years old, I took my first drink of alcohol, and I could never conceive of just having one drink. I had 2 bottles of champagne at a wedding. And I really liked what alcohol did for me. It made me feel like I was somebody. And when I was, by the time I was 12, somebody introduced me to marijuana. They said, "Here, Kelly, have a hit," and I had 6 joints. So it was never just one for me. And by that time, I was drinking a 12-pack of beer on my own. I was a periodic, and during those times that I wasn't drinking or using drugs, I really felt like I was inadequate, and I was going around school trying to be accepted. You know, I was striving for that love and attention that I never felt at home. And I was in a band, and I was in sports. I was in choir. I was in the drama department. You know, I was in plays, and I just did everything imaginable in school just so that I could be noticed. And nobody really seemed to notice me. And when I was 16, my brother and I had this party, and I drank down 151 rum, and it was my first and my last blackout that I experienced. So I switched to the light rum, and by the time I was 17, I became a rumaholic. But I was an alcoholic. And when I was 18, I married the man of my dreams, and I turned my will and my life over to the care of him as I understood him, because from the time I was 12, I wanted to die. And he's the only one that really accepted me for who I was, because all my friends around me thought that I was really weird and different, because I was the only teenager that they knew of that wanted to die. And so I got married at 18, and I had 2 baby girls in that marriage, and that's where my alcoholism progressed. We moved out to Tahoe the last 6 months of our marriage, and that's where I got addicted to prescription drugs. He beat me up all the time, so I was always in and out of the hospital. They gave me painkillers, and I got addicted to codeine, and I got addicted to Visapril, and those are like Valium lights. They're not as heavy as Valium. they allowed me, you know, to function. On one Valium, I'd pass out, so I'd take the Visapril instead. And that didn't last very long. I moved back down here with my parents, and that's really where my life really became unmanageable. I moved in with a roommate, and I met this girl, and she knew of drug dealers, and I allowed them to come in my house because of the attention. And yeah, I think totally great, you know, and we get to party over there all the time, and By this time, I had acquired a heart condition to where I have to take 3 pills every day to regulate my heart, and I'm still taking those today. And so I would always, you know, make that excuse that I couldn't snort crank because I have a heart problem, and that lasted about 4 months, and I tried one line, and I ended up doing an 8-ball that night, and it's like I never did just one. And within 2 months, I wanted to quit, and I saw the insanity in my life. Every time that I was dry, I would take my anger that I had out against my husband, and I would lash out on my kids. And I was a periodic child abuser, and I was always, you know, really calm whenever I was under the influence. And people reported me, and they came out, you know, to interview me, and they'd ask me about drugs and alcohol, and I said no, that had nothing to do with it, because whenever I would abuse my kids, I'd never be under the influence, so I didn't think it had anything to do with it. So I moved into this one place, and this lady that was living downstairs from me was in a program at the time, and I told her I wanted to quit doing drugs, because at that time I was an addict, but I was not an alcoholic. And so she asked me if I wanted to go to an AA meeting. I thought, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I said, I'm not an alcoholic, but I am an addict. Okay, I'll go. And I went to this big, huge meeting, and I didn't stand up and introduce myself, but I listened to what you people said, and I cried. And it was really weird, because some kind of magic happened inside of me during that meeting. I felt like I belonged somewhere, and I had never felt that my entire life. And somehow I just knew that I belonged in that room, and I felt safe, and it felt like home to me. And 22 days later, I had lashed out at my child one more time, and I called up the county officials, and I said, please take my kids. And I ended up drunk that night. And the next day, I said, God, help me get to a meeting. And I came in here. It was a Tuesday night. It was a midnight meeting. I've been here ever since. And I think the reason that I've stayed around here is because I was really willing to do whatever I was told to do, because I didn't want to go back living the way I was living. I hooked up with a sponsor right away, and she told me, you know, read the book. So I read the book, and I started to work the steps at Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went through a period that I had to let go of my kids. I could never see the fact that my ex-husband would ever get custody, and I walked through that. He's had custody of my kids since last December, and that's okay with me today. I'm really happy today. And I was 44 days sober, and I had to look for a job because I had been on welfare, and I was like a whole month without any income. And so I did what you people told me, and I showed up to places, and I applied. And the first place where I applied, they called me when I was 44 days sober, and they said, you're hired. And on that day, I was just feeling, you know, so grateful. I wrote a poem, and I had this vision in my mind that just one of those days, you know, if I keep coming back and keep doing what I was told and apply the principles in my life, that one of these days I'd be up at a speaker meeting, you know. And that's why I'm like really excited, because, you know, I held on to my dreams when I got in here. And when I got here, you know, you people just kept telling me about, you know, the way you used to be and the way that you are now. And I held on to all that hope that you gave me. And I've had experiences in sobriety that I really don't know how I stayed sober. I have to share this one instance where I had one night where I just wanted to do it myself, and I wanted to get away from it all. And God was telling me, Kelly, you know, I'm in control here. What are you doing? And I was just like ignoring him, you know. And what happened for me is I ended up at a motel room on the El Camino, and I was ready to walk out to park my car, And half the Santa Clara police force was there holding me up, thinking that I was robbing the motel. And, you know, they were saying, Kelly, put your, you know, they didn't say my name. Of course, they didn't know who I was. But they said, put your arms up. And I'm all, you know, are you talking to me? And it took me about 5 minutes to finally put my arms up. Because by this time, there was like, you know, 25 cops, and a couple of them had shotguns. And they were telling me to put my arms up. And, you know, this is as far as my arms would go. And I said, okay, what do you want me to do? It's like, what did I do wrong? Can I help you here? And the first thought that came into my mind, and I was thinking all this stuff out loud. I was thinking, I can't believe this. I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't they know who I am? And the next thought that came to my mind was never a dull moment in sobriety. And and then they had me in the back of the squad car because they had me handcuffed and everything, and I was starting to say my prayers that I had learned in here. And when they let me out, I was just like, I'm not going to take nothing. And they're like, oh my God, what did we do to this girl? You know, they felt so guilty. Here I am going, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm in recovery, and I ain't going to take nothing. And they felt so guilty, you know, that they walked me back into my room, and they parked my car for me because I was just so nervous. I couldn't see straight. And I wasn't going to call anybody that night either, and I told them because I had to put a deposit down, and I said, I'll take you up on that phone deposit now. And I called somebody in the program, and I got to dump it, you know, and time and time again, that's how it has worked for me, because I did what you people told me what to do when things happen like that. And I believe for me that being as honest as I possibly can be at any given moment of any given day, that that's how I stayed around here. And today I still have that job that I got when I was 44 days sober. And 3 weeks ago, I had a really stressful night, and I ended up at work, and at midnight, I just broke down, and I cried. And I cried for like an hour and a half, and my poor boss goes, Kelly, are you diabetic? I go, no, just alcoholic. And, you know, and he told me that I was brave, and I didn't see that as being brave. You know, I saw that as a process that I had to feel the feelings, because that's part of my recovery, too, is that I have to feel the feelings whenever stuff is happening. And so anyway, I, you know, when I got here, you people gave me a cup and you started to fill it up with hope. And I had to get a bigger cup. And then I had to trade it in for a bucket. And then I had to start filling up this big barrel of hope. And today I have so much hope, I want to give it away. And when I wrote this poem when I was 44 days sober, and like I said, I had that vision of being here, giving it away to you people, because you people tell me that I have to give it away in order to keep it. And so I want to just close with this poem, and anybody who wants it, it's up here and you can have it. And it's called My Gift to You. I was so scared, not knowing how to cope. You comforted me, giving me hope. I was so needed, wanting ever to change. You accepted and loved me, I thought, how strange. Unconditionally loved, thinking it not so. As the days went by, I came to know. I came to believe like you once did, God's undying love for me, even when I hid. You've given me my life, my dreams are coming true. I'm opening up my heart, it's my gift I give to you. I give you all my patience, listening with open ears. I share with you my joys, trusting you with my fears. Growing through the sorrows, experiences we all share, this fellowship is priceless, no one could ever compare. I wouldn't trade this life, each day is precious and new. I give you all of my hope. It's my gift I give to you. If you're new and you have dreams, hold on to those dreams because they can become a reality if you keep coming back here. Thanks. Maureen K. from San Jose. Hi, everyone. I'm Maureen, and I'm an alcoholic. Feels good to be here tonight. You know, next Wednesday, I will have 9 years of sobriety. And if I look back 9 years ago on a Friday night, my last Friday night that I drank, I sure did not have any friends left. And I didn't have any place to go, and I didn't have any love in my life. I didn't have anyone that cared about me. And still, I refused to accept the fact that I was alcoholic and that I was powerless over alcohol. You know, I came from a family of alcoholism. Growing up, I grew up in a town not too far from here, down in Salinas. It's a farming community. Grew up in a home where there was a lot of love. My parents were good people. They are very good people. My dad was always there for me. I went to Catholic girls' school. I had all the opportunities to have my life work very well, extremely well. When I was young, I was afraid, I was insecure, I had a hard time reaching out to people. And I didn't look at that in my life until I took my step four and I could see my pattern of how I was always afraid of people. But growing up in that small town, I didn't have to reach out. You know, I went to school with the girls that I started kindergarten with. So, you know, we were in a very small class. There were 19 in my class when I got out of high school. And we all, you know, we had known each other. And in this school, we didn't drink and you didn't smoke. And I didn't like any of the guys that I was in high school with because they were all real straight. You know, I always hung around the public high school and I dated the guys that were getting kicked out of high school. And, you know, my parents didn't like it and didn't matter to me. You know, that was, I was rebelling then and I just didn't know it. They didn't say anything to me. My mom, I can remember her alcoholism got bad when I was in junior high. I was not, I didn't feel comfortable bringing my girlfriends home to the house. I did not know what shape she was going to be in. But in those days, and we're talking about the early 60s, we didn't talk about alcoholism. We endured it. My dad just said, you know, your mom's real sick. So in my junior to senior year in high school, I met a man who had come out of the Irish Christian Brotherhood. And I started dating him, and I fell in love with him. And he was a good person. He still is a good man. I went with him for 3 years. And we were married. And all this time, I had never picked up any alcohol. You know, we got married, and we did all the things that our folks asked us to do, you know, get married in the church and raise your kids as Catholics and all those things. And I, you know, was brought up in the Catholic church, and I went along with those traditions. And half the time, I didn't believe in the kind of God that I was taught to believe in. It was appearing and punishing God, and I really didn't believe the church. But I thought I always never had any choice. My whole life, until I arrived at this program, I never felt I had any choice in making any decision. See, I was taught when I was about a junior in high school. I can remember saying to the nuns, I don't want to take French. I don't want to take Latin. I want to take business courses. I want to work. They said, all you have to do is find a good husband. They'll take care of you, and you have plenty of kids, girl, and you'll be fine. And I said, no, that's not what I want. But that was the role, and that's how I grew up, you know. And I've discovered just recently, I was at a retreat, and I spent some time with Father Tom this last Thursday, how my belief system and how the way I was raised, I am a product of that. And he also said that would be, that's probably very good, because what that taught me when I was growing up is I learned a lot of discipline. And for an alcoholic sober, that's one thing I need, is I need some discipline. And I learned discipline through the steps. We were married, and we moved to Southern California. I was unhappy in that marriage within a year. I left him within a year. I thought if I got pregnant, the marriage would get better. I had a baby within a year and a week. I had a little girl. And I married a guy that had a lot of ambition. And he wanted to make a lot of money and he wanted to have a good life. And he was a teacher at that time. He always worked a couple of jobs. And, you know, now I had a baby and I still was unhappy and I was away from my family and I was unhappy. So in the between, we were down there 3 years and I got pregnant again and I convinced him that we ought to move back up this way. I didn't like LA. you know, well, alcoholics, we can all win for a little while, and I did win. You know, we came up here, and I had came up here 21 years ago in June, and I had another little girl. I have a big Maureen and a little Maureen. Maureen is now 21. She's at San Diego State. But between the time of my second and third pregnancy, I went to a party. I went to a cocktail party. I was 6 months pregnant and with my son, and I picked up alcohol for the first time. And I blacked out that night. I don't remember getting home that night. My sister called me the next morning and asked me if I always drank like that. And I said, no, I never picked up alcohol until that night. And for the next 11 years, alcohol and drugs was going to fix me and was going to be the answer to every problem I ever had in my life. And it got a hold of me very quickly. You know, for you new people, there's a part in the book. It says, for women, some of us, we go down very fast. Within 2 years, I was drinking every day. Within 2 years, the only way that I could live was to drink. Those couple of years, you know, when we moved up here, he got in the public school system, he went back to school, he got a credential, he got a master's in family counseling, and we had one of the worst marriages in town, you know. He couldn't relate to me, and I couldn't relate to him unless I was drunk. Then I could tell him everything that I hated about him, you know, and I did a lot of that. We fought when we were going together, and we fought the whole time we were married. So I had a third baby. I had a little boy. And he's 19 now, and you know, I was drinking when he was born, so he never knew me sober until he was 8.5 years old. But when we were here in San Jose, he started to be gone a lot. And there was a lot of money. And we had homes, and we had beautiful homes, and we had a lot of nice cars, and we had some good vacations, and we had a cabana club, and you know, he became Dean of Boys of the largest high school in the valley, and he was 26 years old, and he was a very successful man, and he had a wife for a drunk. And the more promotions he got, the more insecure I got. You know, I thought I was going to lose him. You know, I was insecure from the gate. And, you know, I accused him of things that he never did. And I always used to think that if I could drink enough to mellow out, you know, he'd come home at night, I would be a nice wife instead of a bitch. But I would have, you know, I'd be too drunk. And all the time, you know, the kids went off to preschool. And for a while there in that marriage, I was happy. On the surface, and I was happy being a mother, and I loved those kids a lot. They were the only things that ever meant anything to me were my children. You know, and I was very active in the community, and Bluebirds, and Campfire, and CCD, but during my alcoholism, as it progressed, this disease, I lost all that. You know, I lost the will to want to live. I lost the desire to be a mother. I couldn't function in society, you know. And the denial in me was very, very great. There's no other way. In the process of this, when my daughter was 6 months old, we were still living in L.A., my dad called me. It was around Christmas time. And he said, when you come home this Christmas, your mother won't be home. And I said, well, where will she be, Dad? And he said, she'll be in the hospital for alcoholism. He said, I can't stand her anymore. And either she gets well or we're going to get divorced. You know, I didn't know how bad it had gotten at home. I came home that Christmas, and my grandmother, it was the first Christmas my grandmother had died, and my mom was gone, and here I had this baby. And it wasn't like a Christmas that you dream of when you have your first baby, and you know, you want your mother to enjoy this child that you've brought in the world. And I went to this recovery house, and I found my mother with 5 days of sobriety. She was down in Pacific Grove, and she was happy. It was the first time I had ever seen her happy. And there was a seed planted in me. I mean, I walked out of that recovery house that day, and I said, I'll never be like my mother. And I did not know what I was going to be in for with this disease that I have, too. But in our marriage, he never talked to me about my drinking, not until the very end. He was a very good Al-Anon. He tolerated. He covered up. I had a lot of hit and runs with cars. I beat him up. I broke his arm. Gave him black eyes. You know, it was not a real good scene, and it was not a good scene for the children either. And yet, on the outside, to the outside world, everything was fine. You know, we were happily married, and he was successful, and we had this home, and these three great children. I thought during that marriage another man would fix it. You know, I mean, I tried alcohol and it was fixing it part of the time. So I got involved in a relationship for 3 years. And my ex-husband never found out until one night I got real drunk and I told him about it. You know, I thought, well, I'll just get to you. And, you know, he didn't really like that. And I don't know why, but, you know, he got a little upset with me. And he said, well, why didn't you leave me and go with him, you know? And, there was no future with that relationship. I knew that man did not plan to leave his wife, you know. And eventually he realized what I was, too. You know, I was getting deeper and deeper in this disease that I have of being alcoholism. But I saw my mother as I got sicker, and she got weller. And we didn't talk very much, and I didn't like my mother. And she went to a lot of meetings, and I watched her recover. And she was really happy. And she had a lot of friends. And she ended up with 5 grandchildren. My sister has 2 children. And she was well when they were all born. She could take care of them, you know. And she'd come out of the house and ask me why I was so angry. Why I was so resentful with Bob. After all, he'd given me a good life. How come I hated him so much, you know? And I said, Mom, I just don't like him. I mean, he puts me down. You know, I would never tell anybody the truth. I never could be honest with anybody about what I was doing. You know, I was on pills by now, diet pills. I had no reason to be on diet pills. I was not heavy until the end of my drinking. And I, you know, in the peak of my drinking, I could consume 6 packs of beer a day, a quart of bourbon in the afternoon into the early evening. And if I hadn't blacked out, I'd start on Christian Brothers' bottle of wine. And I did every day. The last 5 years of that marriage. And I was married to him for about 14 years. I can say that I lost periods of my life from 1971 to 1975. I do not remember what happened. Just major events like police showing up at the house because it's your daughter's birthday, and you beat up your husband, and the neighbors call the police. And you have 12 darling little girls that are age 8 years old watching their parents fight. And there's 3 police at the door, you know, one at the front, one at the back, and one 2 doors down the street. And those are the kind of things that I've put my kids through. I can tell you, for the women in the room, if you're an alcoholic and you have children, my 3 children lived a life that took me a long time to forgive myself for. My oldest daughter rebelled. She did not come home. She spent most of her time at her girlfriend's house. My middle daughter lived in her closet. She ate her meals in her closet. And she slept in her closet. And my son slept by the side of his father's bed. And he did that for 3 years after I was kicked out of that house. And those kids lived in utter terror of what I was going to do next. Set the house on fire, which I had several fires in the kitchen. You know. And still Bob kept tolerating all this. Finally, in 1975, he left and he gave me the kids. He said, you try to do life on your own, I'll give you the house. I'll give you my paycheck. See if you can make it on your own. The only thing I wanted to do was drink. I could not maintain. I tried, and it was impossible to maintain. There was no way I could get a job. None at all. He came back 5 months later, and he said, you're still an alcoholic. You haven't gotten well. You're still drinking. I wish to God I hadn't come back. He was back one night and said that to me. And the only way this alcoholic could handle that was to drink more. You know, I was black and blue, and I was gray. I'm in my late 20s when this is going on. And I sobered up the last time at 33. You know, I gave alcohol and drugs my undivided attention for 11 years, every single day. He was back for about, I think that was in May in 1976. And for the next 7 months, we tried everything in our power to have that marriage work. We went to counseling. We went to priests. He asked me to go to counseling. I never was honest with anybody of what was going on in my life. They asked me if I drank. I said, just 2 drinks every night, that's all. Just to, you know, just to I'm nervous, I'm depressed, you know, I just have to have something to keep me calm. And that's all I could say. You know, and I functioned in blackouts, and I drove in blackouts, and I drove my children in the car with, and neighbors' children in the car with, on black. I went over Highway 17 in a blackout with six children and did not remember till the next day and came back, and I never hit anyone. Talk about a God in my life. He was there all the time. He needed to be for this one. In the next 7 months, when he came back, we tried everything in our power to have that marriage go. We got more in debt. You know, another brand new car and about a $20,000 boat. Water ski boat, and I learned to water ski. You know, and I was always so drunk that I couldn't even pull him. You know, he wouldn't dare let me pull him. But we went up to Clear Lake, and we were going to be gone for a month. And after 2 weeks, I woke up one day, and he said, we're going home. You've been drunk for 2 weeks solid. And I did not know that he had planned to file for a divorce when we arrived home. But we arrived home, and that weekend, he was putting a tent away, and he fell off the stepladder in the garage, and he broke his arm. He broke his elbow in several places. And he had to have surgery, and he had to be in a heavy-duty cast for about 5 months, and that meant that he would have to rely on his drunken wife to drive him to work. And he hated that, and I hated that, but you know, he couldn't file for divorce. And the day he got his cast off, he filed for divorce. I did not know it, because you know, when you're out there drinking and using like that, you don't face any reality. There isn't any reality. There was none. You know, I never was honest with my folks. December of that year, I tried to commit suicide. We were going to a party. It was around Christmas time. I think it was the 23rd of December. And I had drank all day long, and I thought I had sobered up enough to go to the party with him. And it was one time that I think he was just going to, you know, take me out one more time to see if I could just handle society. Because by now, I could not handle society. You know, I could not be around his peers. And but he thought, well, maybe this one time Warren can do it for her. Because the time he left, he had asked me to go to Alcoholics Anonymous when he gave me those kids. And I went to a few meetings about 11 years ago. But I did not reach out. I did not get a sponsor. And I didn't basically want to stop drinking, to be honest with you. I didn't want to stop drinking. You know, I just didn't believe that it was that bad. You know, I thought I can still... somehow or another learn to control this thing that I have in me. But that Christmas, on the 23rd of December, he was going down Capitol Expressway, and I guess in me, I really wanted to give up, but I wanted to die. And so I just opened the car door, and I rolled down into the ice plant, and he didn't stop the car. And, you know, I landed in the ice plant, and I had a long white dress on, and it's cold, and all of a sudden, you know, you can be in a blackout, but you do wake up when something like that happens real fast. And I stumbled home. We were 2 blocks away from home, and I called my parents. It's in the middle of the night, and I told them I was locked out. You know, and I don't know how I got in. I know the next morning my dad called me and asked me if I was okay, and I said, yeah, you know, we had just had a bad fight. But I woke up, and he was gone, and the kids were gone. And he called me, and he said, you're an alcoholic, and you need Alcoholics Anonymous, and you better go to meetings this morning. And so I went to some meetings at the Red Cross building over in Los Gatos, but I didn't stick, you know. I wasn't willing to go to any length for sobriety. There was just no way. I didn't want to be honest. But we did go through that Christmas like nothing was wrong. And on the 17th of January, right after Christmas, he filed for divorce. He came home one day, and it was a miracle. I was not drunk. It was the middle of the afternoon. And the kids were gone. They had all, you know, they were at their friend's home. And they were little. They were 6 and 8 and 10. And he said, you're an alcoholic, and you're an unfit mother, and I'm going to take your kids from you. And I knew he meant it. I didn't want it. I fought it. I fought him in court for 10 months, but he had a lot of witnesses, and he had a lot of proof. You know, and so I kind of faded out in the woodwork. I had to.
because I couldn't handle the guilt. And the only way I could handle that was to drink and to use. So for the first time in my life, I faced life alone. I had not worked in about 14 years, and I had to find a job. That was interesting. I got a job as a guard on second shift, and I wanted to learn to control my drinking. And that was the first time I realized that I could not. That the only way I knew how to function in life was to drink and use pills. I was on that job for about 7 weeks, and someone saw me and hired me on in a high-tech company as a receptionist for the president of the company. And that's not a really good place for an alcoholic to be, because you're very, you know, you're in the public and you're very visible. And you cannot show up after having a lot of bad hangovers. There's just no way. And I started doing that. And the company started questioning me on my behavior and my performance and my mood swings and my depression. And I kept saying it was a divorce. They didn't believe me. I knew they didn't believe me. I took a class on trying to face divorce, started dating guys. All of us were bleeding. It was great. We're all going through a divorce. We're all bleeding. You know how it feels when you're going through a divorce? I mean, you just, anything looks good to you. And this, at least that's how it was for me in those days. And I did a lot of guys, and they all drink like I did. I don't know if they're alcoholic, but they drank a lot. And one guy in particular, he helped me at the end of my drinking. But in that company, my boss finally confronted me, and he asked me if I would talk to a doctor about my drinking. And I said I would. And I went to a group in Kaiser, and they have a group called Alpha, and they teach you to control your drinking. And that's great for an alcoholic. I love it. So I went, and I didn't have to be honest. I went every week, and he stayed off my back, and, you know, for about 6 months he was off my back. Meanwhile, I had started gaining weight, and I was getting real bloated. And there were a lot of things, you know, my mind was not functioning too well anymore, and I was very forgetful, and I was having DTs, and I was waking up with the sweats in the middle of the night, and having nightmares of that impending doom, and depression, and wondering how in the hell and when is this all going to end. And there were no friends left, and there were no boyfriends left either, and I could not go near my mother. I was the last one I ever wanted to go near and talk to my mother, you know. And I finally lost the privilege to even see my children on weekends. It got so bad that I could not even walk across the field and see my kids play a game of soccer. Because the guilt I had was I knew what I had done to them. And the only way I could go out and watch them on a Saturday play a game of soccer would be to get loaded before I went out there. And then I would leave before the game was over. I'd go on the way home, I'd buy another bottle, I'd go home and I'd cry and I'd drink. I finally ended up going to jail in 1978 in May. Got a federal offense against me for alcoholism and was put on probation for 2 years. And that time I went to jail, it was over Memorial Day weekend. When I went to jail, it hurt. It hurt real bad. And I knew that I needed to do something, and all I wanted to do was not let my parents find out. Because I have real good parents, and I come from real good stock, and I didn't want their name to be involved in this mess. You know, I was back with my own maiden name, and I knew I was going to hurt them real bad. But I got put on probation. I paid a heavy fine for that. And the same attorney that I have, that I'm working with this week, after 11 years on something else, he was there for me 11 years ago, and he never gave up on this lady. I don't know. He's always liked me. I've been lucky that way, because I've needed him a lot. He had never had to go to federal court until he met me. And he went to federal court for my sentence when I got sentenced for drunk driving at Moffett Field when you're a civilian. 9 in the morning, you have a blood count of 0.5 and 0.6, you're dead. You know, after drinking all night, and the MPs pull you over because you're going too slow. They handcuff you and put you in a van, bring you back to San Jose. The next 4 months after that happened, though, I had also had an accident that morning, didn't know it. called my boss and told him I had an accident. Didn't find out until that night that I had been in an accident when, you know, police didn't, you know, I hit another car in Santa Clara. Didn't even know it. I was in another blackout. But finally, the next 4 months, I started hanging around people I'd never hung around with before. And I was on the hard drugs. And it scared me like, it really scared me because I knew the way I drank, I was going to die. I woke up in tents out in Fresno Valley, not knowing how in the hell I got there, who I was with, and what I had been doing. I did not know. I can remember one weekend on the 4th of July, we had 21 bottles on the way home. That was one day I wasn't going to drink. But I thought, if I drink, I won't make it home. We were with a bunch of guys. I don't remember any gals. Well, there were 21 bars, and it took us hours to get home. And I said to God, if I get home, I'll straighten up my life, you know. And I got home, and I drank more, you know. I showed up at work again in the last blackout on September 14th, and it's actually 9 years this Monday. And I was taken to the nurse's office in a blackout. And the nurse, she was not alcoholic, but she knew a lot about the disease. She asked me if I had anyone to call. And I said, no, there's no one left in my life. No one. She said, are you sure? And I said, no, I've wiped everybody out. Either I've used them, I've borrowed from them, I've lied to them, I've cheated on them. They don't want to be with me. And she said, do you hear what you're saying? This is where you are, Maureen. She said, I think you're an alcoholic. You know, they can never accuse you of that, any company. You can't. She said, would you like some help? And I do not know why, except I was ready and it was a surrender. It was my first surrender into this program. I said, yes, I do. I think I have a problem with alcohol and drugs. And she said, well, where would you like to go? And I said, find me a place like my mother. So I didn't have the kind of insurance to go to Montevideo or Star Lodge or one of these places around here. So the employee assistance program took me home that day. They drove me home because I was drunk. Someone drove my car home. They asked me not to drink that day, and I drank that night. You know, I couldn't quit. But that was the last night. You know, I finished that half gallon of wine. I went to a funeral at the University of Santa Clara that night. My parents were there, about 500 people there, many of them knew me, and I was drunk. But I was on the arm of this attorney that I still have as a friend today. And he called Montevideo and he said, you're going into Montevideo tomorrow morning. The next morning I woke up, the employee assistance program called me. He said, will you come to my office in Redwood City? And I said, I'll get there. I don't know how I'll get there, but I'll get there. I drove up there with this blue Volkswagen that had been banged up, and I got there, and he gave me coffee. I hadn't had coffee, I don't think, for 11 years. And I shook, and he made arrangements for me to go the following day to a hospital. And the following morning, I went to Marin, and I walked into it was a shack. There were 28 men. I was the only woman. And I saw the disease in full bloom. Not only myself, but I saw it in the eyes. I saw it in the despair. I saw it in the loneliness. In the broken up promises. And no dreams that ever came possible. I made a promise to God that I have within me now. I said, I will go through this hospital, I don't care how long it takes, but I don't want to have to come back here again, not as a patient. It was a 4-week program. I stayed 8 weeks because I was very, very sick when I arrived. I did not know what I was about for 4 weeks. But there was a doctor, Dr. Gill. He came down here and he spoke not too long ago. In fact, he spoke at Saturday Night Live. He was the doctor that checked me in. He gave me 6 months to live. My blood pressure was 220 over 160. I weighed 90 pounds more than I do now. And I was 33. He said, you're not going to make it. You're going to have a stroke. They say that you can't scare an alcoholic. But he did touch the heart of this girl. Through a lot of therapy, in that treatment center, they blew my covers, they put me on a hot seat, they started to open me up. They started to break down some walls. What I was out about and where I was. And when you land in one of those places, you have no other thing to do but start looking at your life. Because there's no one left. There was nothing left in my life. They told me my recovery would be in Alcoholics Anonymous. That I was alcoholic. That I could not change it. That I will be alcoholic the rest of my life. But they gave me a solution. They said it would be found in the 12 steps. They said it would be found in service. They said I would need a sponsor. And that I had alcoholism. It was a disease. It was just one of the things that was wrong with me. And the rest would be revealed to me in God's time. And that's how it's been. I fell in love with that place. Once the meeting, the first night I was there, was a man by the name of Rocky. And though our lifestyles were not the same, the feelings he had and why he drank and what he did and the unmanageability of his life and how he never could fit in and how he didn't have self-esteem, I could relate to all that. And after living a life like I lived before, with blinders on, never dealing with any reality, broken promises to everybody and everything, for 11 years, I felt home. My kid called me once when I was up there. And when I talked to them, it hurt so bad that they wouldn't even let me out of the place. The honest reason, that's why I could not get out. So that's why, during that second 4 weeks, they brought in a temporary sponsor, a lady who had lost her kids, and she could start peeling away the onion for me, because I had a lot of guilt. A lot of anger, a lot of resentment at myself. You know, I thought I hated the outside world. I didn't. I was destroying the God within me. You know, God made me to the image and likeness of Him. You know, I am a child of God. They asked me who I was when I arrived there. Who are you, Maureen? I said, I am an S. And he said, no, you're not. First of all, you're a child of God. You're an alcoholic. You have good points and you have bad points. The bad things, the shortcomings, will be removed with the help of God. You will have to learn to discover your good points. And that was all new for me. Because I never knew anything good about Maureen. You know? I never had any faith in Maureen. I never had any confidence in Maureen. I called my mother on November 1st, All Saints Day. I thought I was a saint. I'll never be a saint. I don't want to be a saint. But they let me out on All Saints Day. Of that hospital, and I came back here. And I came over the Golden Gate Bridge. And I looked at that bridge, and I said, that bridge to me is freedom in my life. I never have to live that way again. As long as I live in a solution. As long as I'll do anything for sobriety. Go to any lengths to maintain sobriety. To maintain my spiritual conscience with God, I have to maintain the spiritual life that I have with the God within me. It's number one in this girl's life. Now, I can have all the service commitments I want, but if I don't spend time in meditation and prayer with Him, I will lose my sobriety. I know that, because I almost lost it. I came back here. I was back here. I didn't realize that I sobered up probably in one of the best places in the world, Santa Clara Valley. Got the best AA in the world here, meetings all over. I found out I lived 3 blocks from 400 Campbell. Couldn't believe it. I had two women down the street that lived in it, down the street from me, in an apartment house I lived in. Both became friends of mine. I didn't even know that. All those years I lived in that little apartment drunk. You know, I met a lady who was my sponsor today. I was back here 1 week. She took me through the steps. And she was available for me whenever I needed her. And for you new people, if you need to talk to your sponsor every day, I hope you have a sponsor that is available for you like that. Because I had one, and thank God I did. says, I was really shaky and I was really sick. She introduced me to a fellowship of sisters, because she sponsored a lot of girls, and so when she wasn't there, I had other phone numbers to call. You know, and God was good to me. He's never made it too hard in my sobriety. He took me back to that treatment center when I had a year on the program. I did a meeting, and I was the only one of those patients out of 28 of us that was sober. Now, I never thought that I would be that one out of the 28 that makes it. Except I knew that I had stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I continued to live in the solution. I chose to get married in sobriety. I left the valley for a year. It was a good experience being married. I learned a lot about myself. I was sorry the marriage didn't work out, but I learned a lot about Maureen through that. I also learned that if a marriage is in the way of your sobriety, you have to let it go. And I had to let it go. And it hurt like hell, because I love the man. I will probably always love him. Just couldn't be married to him. But I came back here at 4 years on the program, and I needed a lot of therapy again, and I got it. I also got into this program like I had never been in it before, like with commitments, starting new meetings. I was 5 years sober before I was able to sponsor girls to give back to them what I was freely given. And I am grateful it took that long. It took that long time for God to repair the healing that needs to take place. Because alcoholism, it's a process, it's a slow process of healing. It takes time. And please don't get impatient, because oftentimes I've wondered, when is it going to get better? And it always has. You know, today I have a credible friendship of people in this program, people outside the program. You know, I took the steps and I made amends to a lot of people. I had a lot of people that I had really hurt. Ex-husband, children, parents, attorneys, brother-in-law, sister, probation officers, friends, boyfriends, myself. And you know, and after step 9, I was free and I could look at the world with open eyes. I did not have to run from any situation anymore. A couple weeks ago, I ran into a wall with an ex-husband that was trying to put guilt trips on his woman who's got 9 years on the program, and I would not allow him to do it. I refused. I called an attorney and he took care of it. I gave it to God. I gave the situation to God and the attorney took care of it. And that's new for me. So now I take direction. I take it from sponsors. I take it from, you know, praying for God and asking for guidance. You know, I've gone back to school and gotten a 4-year degree. Gone back and gotten 2 degrees. This is a girl that did not have any confidence in herself at all. She graduated second lowest in her high school class. Graduated from the University of San Francisco a year ago, May, with a 3.5 average. Worked full time. Worked about 55 hours a week and carried 60 units in 15 months. You tell me the program doesn't work. And sponsored it as well. Took the marriage that was a disaster, cleaned up the financial part of it. I took about 90% of the bills when I walked out on second marriage. The first time I walked out clear, I was not responsible, right? I was alcoholic. God saw fit for that. I didn't even question it at the time. I didn't see it until I walked out the second time. I had become responsible in sobriety. If you become responsible in sobriety, if you've made the bills, whether they're joint or not, someone's got to pay for them. And I did not want to go through bankruptcy. So for about 4 years, I had to work about 12 hours a day to pay off the bills. And I did. And I bought a house. And it's all through the steps. You know, so the last 5 years, I've done life. You know, I've faced it with God. And I'm grateful for it. You know, I said to God when I got divorced the last time, I said, God, please, I'd love to get married someday again. I love being married, but I said I want to be whole before it happens. You know, I want to be able to give to that marriage. I want to be able to give that man something back so that we have a partnership. I don't want to go in there broken with a lot of things that I have not worked out with other relationships. So he has seen fit to do this. That's why I'm cleaning up this first marriage that's going on in my life right now. You know, and it's real hard. Because I'm having to close doors on an ex-husband that keeps Colin, and I put a restraining order on him. I mean, I've been divorced from him for 11 years, but I've never had the courage to do it before. And now I have the courage. I have incredible friendship with my three children today. I walked up the aisle last January with my 19-year-old son and saw his sister get married. Many people have never seen me sober. A lot of people came to the wedding that were friends, neighbors, that thought that I had died from what alcoholism, and I hadn't died. My parents were there, my sister and mother-in-law were there. Next day, my sister called me. She said, "That must have been very hard for you, Maureen," but she said, "You sure can do it." So I found out that I could walk through anything that I have to walk through, because God within gives me the strength to do it. And I never knew it before. Kids are fine. They grew up great without Mom. I never got them back, not to race. And, you know, they're all growing. Got Maureen in San Diego State. She's a senior. Went down to sorority last year. We had dinner with a lady and with her girlfriend's parents, and a lady was drunk during dinner. And after dinner, when Maureen and I went back to her apartment, she said, "Mom, thank God that's not you anymore. Thank God you don't embarrass me anymore." This is the little girl that lived in the closet for the last couple years that I was in that home with her. And the last Monday night, when I had dinner with my son, he was talking to me and he says, "You know, Mom, I left home because I didn't like Dad and I didn't like what you told me." He's 19 now. And I let Robbie, I let all those kids go with love. You know, I let all the lives of that are around me, near and dear to me, go. I don't know what's best for anybody. I don't even know what's best for me sometimes. But when Robbie came and saw me last February, and he was broke, he'd been out on the streets, he was lonely, and he was hungry. He said, "You think Mom, Dad will take me back?" I said, "Why didn't you go ask him, Robbie? Why didn't you learn to get along with your dad?" I said, "Why didn't you learn to love him unconditionally? Because he knows no other way." I said, "That's how I learned to love your dad, because he's been a good father. He saved my life. He kicked me out." So he went back, and he's been with his dad for a half a year. Kid's got a job. His dad helped him get a new truck. And he said, "You know, Mom, you helped me so much, I will never forget it." So what I've given back to those kids is this program. Morning, he called me at 2:30 on Wednesday, 2:30 a.m. yesterday morning. "Mom, I'm lonely. I didn't get accepted in this certain group down in sorority." I said, "Well, punking, you're not supposed to. God has something better for you." And she said, "Don't talk to me about that program, Mom. I hear it coming through your voice. But you know, I can't help but give her back program." Because we talked for an hour. She said, I said, "Will you go to sleep now? It's 3:00 in the morning. You have to get up at 7 and go to school." "I feel better, Mom." You know, and with Colleen, my oldest one, it was the hardest one for me to ever break walls to get to know. It took me 2 years on this program for her to even take a drive in the car with me. Lots of times she hung up on me and said, "I hate you, Mom. You're just a drunk. You've never been there for me." I just kept praying for her. So I got to plan a beautiful wedding for her. So God does work. I know He's always worked. Today I have a fantastic relationship with my own mother. Getting to know my own mother in sobriety has been a... I am so grateful that God has kept her alive for me to be back here for the last 5 years to do that. She has 24 years on the program, and she's an incredible lady. And when I'm down, she helps me, and when she's down, I help her. And I talked to her the other day. My dad is very proud of me. He says it in very subtle ways, gives me rings here and there, you know, and he lets me know that he's proud of me. But I have to always remember where I came from, that I'm one drink away from a drunk. Doesn't have anything to do with 9 years, but I'm 12 steps away from that drunk. So for you new people, please keep coming back. Go to a meeting every day. If you can, your first year of sobriety, that's what I did. Get a sponsor and work the steps. And you will have a journey that you will, you know, your life will take off in directions you'll never dream. Because I never dreamed that I would have peace of mind, content, and be okay with Maureen. I never knew that. And that has come true for me. Thanks.